You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
How could you explain that, you know, other than the colleges being places where people were starting to discover new music and the old national identity thing really grew with the old progressive rock thing? And then you have kids like Piggy from Voivod who grows up in such a context. And he starts picking up progressive rock licks and he starts, you know, liking that. But he's also living in a region where there are bikers everywhere and hard rock shows everywhere. So he's listening to stuff like Ochos, a band in which he would play later on in his life. But he would like the progressive rock, but he would also go to see Anvil in the early 80s when they would come and tour in the biker network of bars. So basically you mix all that and you get Voivod.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I hope you guys had a glorious weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops Metal Podcast episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal was one of Montreal's premier metal promoters, and I am so, so stoked to tell you that they have started booking shows again. So far, they've announced that in the fall, Ginger is coming, and right before Christmas in December, they got All Them Witches coming through. So excited to see who else they're bringing through Montreal. It's going to be amazing. I am super, super honored to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Before we jump into today's episode, I would just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to rate it and write a review, because when you do that, more people just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. When someone is looking to listen to a new podcast, what do? They scroll down, they read the reviews. You could be the person that helps sway someone into becoming a brand new Vox and Hops head, and that would be something that I would truly appreciate. On today's episode, I'm with Félix B. de Bossy and Yann Campbell. They just dropped the English translation of a book that I have been cherishing for years called No Speed Limit, The History of Quebec Metal. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops episode number 259.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I am with Félix B. de Bossy and Yann Campbell, and I am very, very stoked to be with you because you guys just did something super cool. You guys just dropped the English translation of No Speed Limit, The History of Quebec Metal, which spans from 1964 to 1989. So stoked to be with you guys. You guys are Quebec metal legends right now. I'm serious about this. Let's start with a simple question of how are you guys doing?
Pretty good. This has been really, really nice. I was not expecting anything from, you know, when we put out the French version, I wasn't expecting anything. And it turned out being like the biggest project in my whole life. And now that the English version is out, I actually wasn't expecting anything either. And I'm doing podcasts with people in the UK and people elsewhere in Canada and stuff like that. And it's just totally cool. I love it. It's crazy. So yeah, doing pretty good.
That's awesome. How about you, Yann?
For my part, I'm very damn good, better than my English speaking. And for my part, I mostly help Félix on this project because originally, like 15 years ago, I had this idea with Félix and Louis Girard from Sans Frais Magazine that we can put like a book together to reunite in one project everything that was said about on the website, the forums, the magazines, but there was no book about the local scene. So we went about over this, and finally Félix did his part, you know, and this project is going very well, better than we thought. So I will say, like Félix, I'm feeling very, very well today because of that.
Fantastic. You know what else makes us feel really good? Craft beer. So what are you guys drinking on your side tonight? Because Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends and talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. How about you, Félix?
Well, tonight I'm actually having I have two different brands. in front of me. But this one, I already drank it. Okay, so this is not what I'm drinking right now, but this beer right here is perfect for the occasion. My friend Jean-François Gibson at the Gib Boutique Spécialisée here in Rouen, he's like one of the kings of the whole microbrasserie. You say craft beer?
Craft beer scene. Yeah.
So basically, he's like one of the kings of craft beer, and he was my my drummer in my band for years. Like, we played music together for 20 years. Yeah, and he, for my birthday, he gave me this Voivod beer, and I was like, oh, I heard about it. I looked for it at Peluso in Montreal, but I couldn't find it just because there's just too many beers, and I didn't bother to ask anyone. But and that's my problem. I'm sure they had it, but Jean-François Gibson gave me that for my birthday. I just drank it, and it's really, really good. I love it. It's by Opfenstark. Uh-huh. I'm pronouncing that right. And c'est la Voivod Lost Machine, and it's a really good beer. I love it. And I actually drank it in this really cool buck. Is that how you say it in English?
Yeah, too? It's a buck.
The beer buck? Yeah. Okay, so we actually use the English words.
I think it's a German word. The German word, that's why.
Oh, really, eh? So I was going to try to say thank you in German, but I realized that I don't know any German. So.
Dankeschön.
Oh, that's it. That's it. So it's easy. The original Bock from the Montreal Mustache Bar, but like from the late 60s when it first opened, it was a Dixieland jazz bar. So you have a man and his mustache, Norm Silver's Mustache Bar. This is a really cool artifact that I don't know if I did put it in the book or not. I know I tried to scan the thing and I wanted to put it in the book, but I can't remember if it ended up in there. But anyways, it's my favorite book because it has all this history. And then after being a Dixieland jazz bar, well, it became the heavy metal bar of the 80s in Montreal. So that's why I love it.
It's so cool. And that Hoffensark brew is amazing, and it's a very unique style of brew. They actually warm up these stones in a fire, and then they drop that into the boil, and it releases these minerals into it. It's a very, very unique brew, very German style brew. Killer. How about you, Jan?
For my part, kind of dull. I'm kind of straight. I don't really drink, so. Drinking some wine. That's my bourgeois side, you know. But tonight I don't have any wine or any beer. I have a kind of problem with my belly, so I can't have fun right now. So I'm just drinking nothing, neither water, just nothing.
That's even more metal, yeah.
It's more metal to drink nothing, even if it's not water, you know. So I know that here we have a lot of we have a lot in Rouyn-Noranda, in our own town, a lot of craft beers amateur or big fans of that. And it's really, really popular over here. So every time friends came home, you know, they don't come with a Coors or Budweiser. Or this era is like centuries ago in their head. So now it's craft beers, quality craft beer, local or import. But at least here in Rouen, it's really popular. I think I'm the only one in town who don't drink craft beer over here.
But you got to take care of your health. And I remember you mentioning that to me because we were supposed to actually do an interview together 2 years ago, right after I started the podcast, when we were coming through Rouyn-Noranda with Aborted. And I totally went to Gib that night and spent a bunch of money and picked up a bunch of beers that night. And I also went and actually recorded an interview at Le Trèfle, which is what I'm going to be drinking. Shout out to David Baudouin for making sure that I got this beer tonight. This is their Cherno Pivo. It's their Imperial Stout, but it's the bourbon barrel age version. I'm going to crack this. Let's talk about beer. Let's talk about our very first beers. Do you remember the first beers you've ever drank?
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that for sure. And it was with one of my friends. I was in grade 6. Wow. And I was, yeah. And actually, I believe that night we went to a local dance. You know, there was this dance that the sixth graders were invited to when they were preparing to get into the secondary school, right? And when we came back from there, his parents were home, but his older brother was there with a couple of friends, and they were listening to like Red Hot Chili Peppers and Nirvana and stuff like that. It was around 1993. And they had this really classic Molson Export beer laying there on the counter. And I said, hey, can I get a taste of that? You know, I was trying to act cool. You know, you're like 11, 12, trying to be a teenager. And they said, yeah, yeah, why not? Have a beer, kid. So I picked up that beer and I thought it was awful. I really didn't like it, but my grandfather would hate me to say that, and may you rest in peace. He was the local Molson representative.
Yes, yes.
In the 60s. Yeah, so he sold beer. And let me tell you that in Abitibi-Témiscamingue, back in the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of beer that was drank in bars and hotels and stuff like that. So he did make a little bit of money with that Molson beer back in the days. And he also was very close. And that's a very cool fact. In those days, Molson and the Canadians were really, really close. Well, they still are, but they were very close together in the Montreal Canadiens, the hockey team, of course. And a lot of the players in the 60s and the 70s were from Rouyn-Noranda. We had like a lot of old school hockey players. So basically, some of them, when they first were hired by the Montreal Canadiens, they were not paid that high. It was not like it is today. So during the summer, they would come back in town and they would have to find work. So they were working for my grandfather as delivery guys. So basically, you have players from the Montreal Canadiens who were coming back to town in the summer to deliver beer for Molson in the 60s. It's crazy, man. People like Réjean Houle, you know Peanut there? Well, he's still around. Yeah, well, he was doing precisely that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
How about you, Yann? Do you remember your first beer?
Yes, yes and no. I remember that in my family, they are big fans of beers. But for my part, I don't know why, okay? I'm supposed to love beer, but I never loved that very much. So probably I'm like the worst guest you can have on your show to talk about beer. I'm more on wine, you know? I remember being really, really drunk on wine, and especially when we were touring with Naraxis, they were drinking beers because beers on tours is almost free, but not wine. I have to pay my own wine because I'm a bourgeois, you know. So I went to get this blush California rosé wine for like $5 or something. So sometimes I was buying two bottles, and it was on the tour, especially with Necrophagus, like back in 2006 ago in the U.S., and I remember everybody was drunk on beer. I was drunk on wine, so I was maybe talking too much. Maybe I was enjoying life and being really enthusiastic about everything. Because wine give me, some l'envie de parler tout le temps, blah, blah, blah.
It makes you want to talk a lot.
Yeah, talking way too much. And I remember that on beer, I was maybe like 15, 16 years old, but for my part, it was not like my favorite drink, but so I never really grabbed or stole beers in the fridge of my parents, mostly their wine.
I didn't give you a proper introduction. You did used to sing for Naraxis, as that everyone now knows, and I apologize for that. This is killer. This is boozy as hell, but not over the top. It's got a great mouthfeel. It's creamy, some chocolatey notes, some coffee notes. Killer stout from...
What's it called? Because I don't remember seeing that one. Is it new?
It may be new. I should have done my homework on that. I apologize, but it's killer. It's really, really damn good. It's like a more intense version because they've aged it in bourbon. So originally, I think it's 6%, and now it's at 8.7. Killer.
Well, that's very interesting. You know, which my favorite beer by the Trèfle Noir is the Old Barn Evil. My favorite craft beer style is Scotch ale. So yeah, I've been drinking a little bit too much, but yeah, Scotch ale is my favorite type of craft beer. And the Old Barn Evil by the Trèfle Noir is awesome. You can't drink too much of that because it really gets to your head like really quick. But I love it when I go for a Scotch ale. I go for that. And that really is my favorite beer by them.
Awesome. Doubt. For myself, it's their Ghostbuster. I love it. 6% Imperial Ghost. Goza, I drink that in the summer in the park, thinking that it's a 3% beer, and then realize it's a 6% beer.
Realize you can't stand up.
Jan, you never really dove deep into the craft beer scene, but Felix, do you remember what your first craft beer would be, your first beer that of higher quality that showed you that beer could be more?
Yeah, totally. And it's funny that you ask that, because I told you about Jean-François Gibson of Chez Gibb here in Rouen. Him and me, we played music together for 20 years. He was my drummer. I was the singer and guitar player. And we actually lived together for a year on Rachel Street in Montreal, right on the corner of Iberville. And that was around, I would say, 2003 or 2004. And back in those days, well, we were young and thirsty. So basically, every other night we'd end up at the Depanneur right across the street, which is called Paluso.
Paluso, of course.
That's right. And so we'd go there and buy a 12-pack and, you know, drink beer. And at a certain point, Jean-François was drinking a bit more than I was, but, you know, I'm not trying to say he was more of an alcoholic. Yeah, I was more, I was already working in bars, so I was not drinking at home. That's the main thing. I was a DJ at Pub Le Balafré back then. And so he kind of got tired of, you know, drinking the old Budweiser and stuff like that. And he realized that there were some craft beers in the back, but, you know, it was nothing like it is now, you know. Now it's a grocery store, basically, filled with beers. But back then, they had a nice little selection. And he started, you know, tasting different beers. And I believe one of the first ones I tried was like either Dieu du Ciel or something like that. And it was because of him trying different types of beers at Peluso around 2003, 2004. And I remember his dad coming over to visit, and he said, you know, and his dad was a Depanneur owner, but here in Rouen. And he said, "Dad, you should go check that out, because they have good beer there. They have different types of beer." And they started together tasting different beers. And this is how they basically expanded the mission of their regional Depanneur, because of how it was happening at Peluso, because of the whole selection that was there at Peluso. So, and now they are, Chez Gibb are like a really, really nice place. They have a crazy selection. They were pioneers here in the region. I remember Jacques Gibson, you know, taking his little van, stopping in Montreal, getting a box of whatever craft brewery here, and then going to Rimouski, and then getting a couple of boxes, and then going all the way to whatever Gaspésie or Saguenay-Lac-Saint-Jean, and then basically fill up his own van with different craft beers and coming back to the region to sell them. But there was no distribution. It was him
who was
going around picking up the beer and bringing it back in our region in Abitibi. So this work that they did, I was just around. I was just a witness of what they were doing and tasting here and there a couple of beers. But it kind of it's an empire that was starting, and I had no idea. And now they are references.
Super cool, super cool. Let's dance into metal. Let's talk about your very first shows. The first show that you went to go see. What would that be? Let's start with Jan.
Okay, that's really simple. The first show, the first real show I went to, I organized it. So really? it was in September 97 here in Rouen Aranda, and the show was Covadis with Naraxis, two bands I didn't know. So, and I passed through Stephen Henry. He was Naraxis, if my studies are good, is the first metal band from Quebec who have a website back in 97.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, and there was like an Stephen, eh?
Yeah, so there was an extract of 30 seconds music about the first album of Naraxis, Imagery. And there was an email, but I didn't have an email myself back in the day, so I called Stephen Henry phone number that is still the same today.
And, I'm sure it is.
And so finally I called him and I said, "Did you guys doing some show somewhere?" And he catch that I'm starting to love Covadis with their first album, Forever. So it was in summer 97, And we just start to talk over the phone about maybe putting a show in Rouen. There was only Anonymous who came in Rouen like a couple of years ago with punk bands like Overbass or that kind of scene. So I said with my friend, well, we can put on a metal show. So we put on the show Nerexis and Covadis. Nobody here really knew them. It was at the time when to make discover the music to somebody else in school, we were having those yellow Walkman, you know, with tapes.
Yeah, of course.
And
but, yeah.
With the ears like this, you know, just you know, you can take this, put it in your ear, just hear one bass drum, one guitar, one vocal, but it was enough to bring him to the show, yo. So it was cool to do this. And this is where I discover the whole metal scene, by the way, because from there, that show, it was about 400 people with mosh pits.
Wow.
And what we know from Rouen was already there, you know, at this time. So that was my first show, and that's the original reason why I went later on singing Rags, because of that event.
That's amazing. It's the connections, eh? These little life decisions that lead to other things in our life.
Absolutely, yeah.
How about you, Felix?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I was there at that show.
Of course you were.
And I did not even knew Jan back then. But yeah, I was a kid. If there was a show in town of any type of alternative music, I would show up, basically. So I went there and I fell in love with Covadis. And I was into punk rock. I was not into metal like at all at that moment. But I did pick up the album and I tried to learn Legions of the Betrayed on my guitar. And I can still play that little riff, but, you know, a couple notes there. And then at a certain point, you know, it's just too hard for me. So I stuck with punk rock and as a guitar player. I kind of understood there that it was not going to be my jam as a guitar player. But yeah, my very first show was a local punk show around 97 also, I believe. It was in a school cafeteria, three local bands, CDN, Unfool, and Vacarme. And there also was the rapper Anada J, who was there between bands. And he later on started the label Discs Essentiel, and it's now like the one of the biggest hip-hop record labels in Quebec. He has all the big names. But that was my first alternative show, because before that, you know, I saw like Les Bébés and bands like that, but I still love them, and so I'm going to drink to that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm going to drink to Patrick Bourgeois, and because he's dead, and that's sad. But this scene that Jan and me basically grew up in really mixed punk rock, metal, and sometimes rap. I don't think we had much choices. You know, at a certain point, there began to be punk rock only shows and metal only shows, and you know, things started to be more precise in people's tastes. But in the very beginning, and for a while, it was all mixed up, and it was cool like that. You could have like either Grimskunk or Grooveyard playing with Anonymous or Banlieue Rouge or, you know, any of those bands. And it was that 90s scene, you know, and it was fun to be part of that.
It's awesome because you guys are all basically outlaws. You know, outside of the norm, not commercial. So you guys were all fitting together, whether it was punk rock or metal.
That's it. Or even rap, or even, you know, I remember I had one anti-racist skinhead. There was one skinhead in Rouen, of course, anti-racist, but, you know, so, and one straight edge guy. So he also was my friend. So we also had like this little hardcore straight edge scene. So at a certain point, we had like three straight edges. So it was like they had a scene, you know?
I love it. Let's talk about, this is a Heavy Montreal Presents Vox and Hops episode. So we have to talk about Montreal. I get asked this question just about every interview that I do when I go out in the world. Montreal is a prolific scene for the metal scene, but you know, it expands more from Montreal. We always end up in Montreal, but it comes from everywhere else in Quebec. So we can expand it to Quebec at this point. Why Quebec? Why does Quebec have so many extreme metal bands?
This is a simple question coming not with a simple answer. So, by the way, there's so many. I can compare with, let's say, Norway or Sweden or Finland, that are small Nordic countries not isolated from the rest of Europe, but in their own zone, you know, in their own corner. And I think Quebec have probably something culturally similar to these countries in terms of, I can say that. I think we evaluate in the same kind of conditions. It's a Nordic country. It's about 10 million people over here in Quebec province. And we have also a plenty of time to play music during winter time. It's 6 months a year. So I think having your own jam spot, rehearsal spot, jamming with your friends, I think it's something that we have to do as an occupation first, maybe as a hobby. And after this, it's coming more professional because we're going more better and better and more effective on our instruments. So I think when we start a band very young in Quebec, that you are from Rouen or Rimouski or Montreal, I think the big magnet in the Quebec scene will always be Montreal. This is where you have to go to meet the people, meet the scene, meet the medias, and label owner and stuff like this, and the other bands. But let's say like Necrotic Mutation, back in the days they were living in Rimouski, and they were linked to that Montreal scene, but they were also representing Rimouski death metal scene back in the days. Now they move in Montreal like years ago, but back in the days it was possible to have your own band in your area, like let's say in Rouyn-Noranda or Saguenay-Lac-Saint-Jean or somewhere else. But after a couple of years, if you become more professional, you have mostly it's suggested to move in Montreal to be in the heart of the scene. So the reason why there's so many bands in Quebec, I think it's because of winter, that we have a plenty of time. And we are also living in a place where rock music always had a big impact since the 60s. And I think people are used to hear like electric guitar sounds with drums. And they take it from rock to grindcore. I think it's coming from the same core. You know, it's based on bass, guitar, drum, vocals. So if you play rock or death metal, at least as it sounds electric, I think Quebecois will appreciate it some way.
Hmm. Be more open to it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're a rock nation. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. How about you, Felix? What's your take on this?
I would go with the, of course, historical point of view and to add to that. And, you know, the basic rough element to this music really matches with the basic rough attitude and culture of the regions around Montreal. And also with this interesting, I wouldn't say a paradox, but the fact that there also is a very present taste for culture, and it kind of grew with the arrival of the cégeps back in the local colleges in Quebec back around 1967, and the network of Quebec universities all around the province. At that point, we started to have music courses available to basically everyone or anyone. It was almost free back then to go to college or university in Quebec. And so you could go and study music, and it was a fun, basically, matter to study. I'll put it that way. And all of those institutions also had these concert halls. They were called SUM, salles d'usage multiple. So basically a multi-usage room. I don't know how to really translate.
So basically, it could be theater, or it could be a concert, or it could be.
That's it, exactly. If you needed somewhere to gather people, well, you could use that place. So either if it was for a show or something, so it was possible at that moment to put together shows in these colleges. They started to have bands from like local bands, but also bands from the United States, from the rest of Canada, or from Europe, to play in those rooms, in those sums. And so you could have bands like Ted Nugent's Amboy Dukes from Detroit coming to play there around 1967, this really heavy psychedelic stuff. or you could have bands like Gentle Giant coming from the UK and tour the colleges. It's weird when you think about it, you know, who tours colleges? They wouldn't do that in the rest of Canada. Neither would they do that in the United States. They would tour the bars, or they would tour concert halls, maybe smaller places before they were very, very well known. So Genesis and Gentle Giant started doing that. So you had these rough people that were the bikers, because the biker culture was really big in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s in Quebec. And if you were there in the 90s, you know that up until that moment, until there was a crackdown on biker culture by the police, well, they were basically ruling the province. They were the mafia. They were really, really dangerous, basically. But in the 70s, they were really present. Like every village had their biker club. So they would also put shows together. So you would have either Offenbach or April Wine playing biker shows, and you would have Gentle Giant and Genesis playing the colleges. And it could happen in the same town, during the same month. So people were mixing up, you know, in between the bikers and the people of the colleges and stuff like that. So it kind of made this weird mix in the 70s. And the whole prog rock thing really did become a national identity thing. You would find elements of prog rock in commercial music in Quebec. And that's crazy. That doesn't make any sense. Like, the biggest band of the 70s in Quebec is Harmonium. Harmonium is progressive folk music. And on their album, Leftad, it's progressive rock, basically. They would sell 100,000 records, and they would pack up arenas all around the province, and also in Western Canada. They would have they had a little success. They also toured Europe and they toured California. But so how could you explain that? You know, other than the colleges being places where people were starting to discover new music, and the whole national identity thing really grew with the old progressive rock thing. And then you have kids like Piggy from Voivod, who grows up in such a context, and he starts picking up progressive rock licks, and he starts, you know, liking that. But he's also living in a region where there are bikers everywhere and hard rock shows everywhere. So he's listening to stuff like Ochoz, a band in which he would play later on in his life. But he would like the progressive rock, but he would also go to see Anvil in the early 80s when they would come and tour in the biker network of bars. So basically, you mix all that and you get Voivod.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Dude, you nailed it. Because I have been asked this question countless times, and I threw this question at, or actually it was thrown at us, because for the 2-year anniversary episode of Vox and Hops, I sat down with Mike DeSalvo, Lord Worm, Martin Lacroix, and myself, all of the Cryptopsy vocalists, and this question was thrown at us, and both Mike and Worm were like, we just found the solution, we know what it is. And they said it's the prog rock scene. And the evolution of that into the extremity is not that far, but you like even tied in more dots. So now you are added to my credited answer whenever I get thrown this, because since I did that interview, I've been answering Lord Worm and Mike DeSalvo have answered. So you are now added to that answer, and I'm going to keep spreading the knowledge of why Quebec has extreme music. Well.
And it's all in the book. Basically, it's all because of the book that it's because of tons of interviews. And you know, it's basically after years of doing research that I kind of realized that, well, those are the principal moments where it grew out of this province.
The CJEP thing I had never heard of or thought about, and the biker thing makes perfect sense, and the melding of the two makes perfect sense.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.
Let's talk about the book. It's I've loved it for years. Like, I've totally cherished my copy ever since actually my wife picked it up because she loves books and I love books, and she picked it up that night while I was on stage or after the stage after that show. I can't remember. She might have bought it from one of you guys, and I loved it. It's amazing. Why did you guys make a book? Jan sort of mentioned a bit at the beginning why exactly it came to be, but I'd like a more concrete answer.
Yeah, that like the reason why is as I told you just before, it was like because there was all these magazines, website, forums. The whole scene, everything was written about what's happening in the scene, but it was not concentrated in a book in only one volume. So it's basically because of that. And if you know the main reason why, the core of that reason, maybe Felix, you don't know this. I have some big argues with the guy from the Raxis back in the days, but by emails, you know. So I have some these long emails pressing myself about the way we should do things and we should blah, 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 blah. And finally, Rob and Steven just told me, man, what the fuck? Why don't you just write a book, man? You know? And I remember that in my kitchen in Montreal, like, Rob was like so exhausted of to read my long mails, and he was like, man, you're good to write, but we're in a metal band, you know, so why don't you just write a book? So, and I said, that let's make some ways in my head, you know. So I talked to Louise Girard from Saint Fray, and then Felix, and we said, maybe we can put something all together, because Felix was interested in the 60s and the 70s, and that proto-metal, proto-metal is the word I think we just invented, but I think it was coming more and more metal, and we don't really know what happened before Voivod, you know? Sometimes we start the history of the scene in 91, 81, or 82, 83, when Voivod started to being a real band, but before them, there was other bands like DDT or other many other rock bands that they were just a step before being heavy metal bands. So I think we shall put all together like the rock bands, the punk bands, and finally coming through that heavy metal scene of the 80s. So that's what that part of the history is on, because that book will be like the first maybe of two or three other volumes coming. And the other one I'm not doing it with Felix. I'm doing it with Louise Girard from Saint Fray magazine back in the days. So she's more specialized in the 90s scene, and she was there, and she have all these archives and that she have in boxes, like very well conserved and everything. So the reason why we finally wrote that book is because I was writing too much to my death metal band. They were exhausted about this. And finally, we decided that all this information was in the air, but we have to put the concert in one volume. So that's the reason why. I think we're kind of intellectual with rockers, metalheads, and we like to put in words what we live in emotions during the life, I think.
I love this. I love it. I love it. So well done. What were some of the biggest challenges putting this together?
Man, finding people.
That are still around, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Finding people like, they weren't that tough to find, but I give them as an example, because a lot of people can know them. Guys like the guys from Damnation. These guys were stoners, like heavy stoners in the 80s. They were doing drugs and drinking and stuff like that. And they have not all turned out well, not all of them. So back in 2000, I'd say when I first started doing research around 2007, and then when I really got into that around 2011, 12, 13, 14, well, it came out in 2014 first, at first in French. yes, we had Facebook. Yes, we had ways of reaching people on the internet, but not everybody was on there. It was hard to find those people. You know, if you played in a heavy metal band in 1984, where are you today? Man, honestly, like sometimes you, the only thing you have is a name. Like, let's get also, if I think about Damnation, their drummer is called Thud. So, so that was like in
Googling 80s, Thud. 80, yeah.
That's it. Damnation Thud, you know, I'm like, it's 2007 and he played in 1987. I'm like, okay, so how do I find this guy? Well, you know, the thing, what happened is that a friend of mine, Roy Vuccino, who plays in Red Mass, and he's one of the top Montreal musicians, in my opinion. Well, he was practicing like right next door to Pascal Thud Denieux, and he said, my friend, he used to play in Damnation. I'm like, oh my God, so that's a clue, man. I need to talk to that guy. Find me a phone number. So that's the type of thing that happened. So that was really tough to find those guys. Some of them I was not able to find. And at a certain point, I was pretty sure that I had found all of the bands that had existed in Quebec, or maybe just heard their name or read their name somewhere. And the two last bands that I had not found anything about, nor had I heard their name, were bands from my own region. They were from Val d'Or, right, very close to Hawaii. One of them is called Invulnerable Terrorist.
It's a memorable name.
It is. And the other one is called I can't remember the name, but both their demos and were put out on vinyl recently by OU Nothing Records, and they just put out actually Capitalist Alienation's only LP also, early over bass guys that were friends with Voivod. Anyways, it's a cool label, but yeah, so I'm still a bit mad that those two bands, Invulnerable Terrorist and the other one, are not in the book, not even mentioned, because they were really hard.
It took so many years to get an English copy. What were some of the challenges to finally get an English copy? Was that something that you wanted to do initially, or is it something that came in your mind later?
It's I think at first we knew that most of the fans of the Quebec metal scene bands were living outside of Quebec, so they were at least English readers, you know. So we decided to put in French at first, and when we decided with our editor, Les Éditions du Quartz, maybe to have a subvention. When you receive money from the government, how do you call this in English?
A subvention. It's exactly the same.
So we asked them to have a subvention to find a translator. And finally, a girl that born and raised in Rouen but now live in Gatineau, we knew that she was a doctor in traduction or something like that. Was like, that thing exists, all right? So we went through her and asked her if she can do it. She gave us a rate, and finally, Les Éditions du Quartz put the money on with Geneviève. But it takes about 2 years to be translated correctly, because there was a lot of rereading to make sure that the language sounds natural and not very just French translated to English. You know, it have to be some fluid. So yes, the process went through a lot of readers. French readers, English readers, bilingual readers, whatever. So that was a long process, but also was the first time for us that we were translating a book from French to English, and also it was the first time our editor was doing this also. So I think that the main problem was only the time it took, because it took like 7 years or 6 years and a half after the French version it came out. So it was kind of long, but also the upcoming other volumes that will cover the 90s and the 2000s, or maybe will just come on the market in a year. So the fact that the English version went out on January or February 2021 will give the impression to the international reader, at least, this is a new project.
Very cool. Yeah.
So I think it's kind of reborn to the project, to make sure that when we're going to have the other volumes, it it will be in the same buzz. So now in the US, the book is selling very well, by the way. And so in a year or two, if we have a French version of the volume 2, and in 3 years, let's say we have an English version of that other book, so it will not be that long in between the others, because it was long because it was our first time we were putting in this kind of project, you know.
And let me come clean about that, because I have a little confession to make. I was not of a lot of help in that whole translation process. I told Jan, and at that point, after the book that came out in French, and it was really overwhelming, the whole success that we had. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that because it was really tiring. I had no idea what I was stepping into, you know, when the whole, it really became very, very big. I was really happy about it, but I was really exhausted after that. So I could not jump into the whole translation project right after the book came out. And at a certain point I said, Jan, you do that, you do the whole thing, or I'm not going to do anything. I can't put my head into that, my energy into that, because I just was not able to do it. So Jan worked really hard on that. And we also have, I believe, to mention that our editor basically almost closed in between.
Jeez,
and
yeah.
Jan and me worked, and many other people worked really hard to put that back on track and give this editor like a second wave of energy, because they already had some, let's say that was a very small editor, regional editor. They never really sold more than 300 copies of any book they put out. And now they had sold 3,000 copies of that book. Yeah. So it was overwhelming for them. It was overwhelming for anyone, everyone in there. And it also, the success of the book allowed them to pay a lot of their debts. And after the debts were paid, they were like, okay, we're done with this. we need to move on. Yeah. Yeah. And then we said, no, you can't move on, because we have more books to put out.
Yeah. So that's why they're still here.
It's kind of simply put, but Jan really did put a lot of energy into that. And either we're talking about putting the editor back on track and translating the book. So kudos to Jan, because he did a lot of work on that. It took years, but it took a lot of work.
Absolutely. I love that. You were talking about two more tomes. What would be the year spans for the next two ones? And you're saying that you're seeing the French one coming out within a year for the tome two, and then within 4 years, hypothetically, a tome three. So let's talk about the future of No Speed Limit.
Right, it's really simple. At first, our original idea, like 15 years ago, was to do just one book. Felix was supposed to do like the first part of the book. Louise was supposed to be the second part, and I was supposed to be in charge of the third part. But finally, there was so many stuff, so many research, that we decided to put it not in chapters, but in books. Okay, so the book of Felix finally is the first chapter of that big idea we had. So
a very long chapter.
Yeah, very long chapter. Yeah. So that first covers 1964 to 1989. So it's covering all the rock, the hold rock, the rock prog, and then we have those biker rock stuff, and then finally coming with Voivod and Anvil and thrash metal bands, and finally in 1989 we heard a band like Gargots or Necronomicon doing some death metal. So we decided that in 1989 the scene was changing. And so the volume 2 will be from 1989 to 1997. So it will cover the last part of the 90s, where we were working without internet. So we were still in tape trading. We were still in sending written message to the mail, like pen pals, okay? So we decided to stop in the 97 because of that, because in 1998, internet is really coming through the scene, Everybody will have a website, and it will revolutionate the whole way of recording, promoting yourself. Everything will change. There was kind of internet revolution through the scene. So we decided to concentrate ourselves on volume 2 from 89 to 97. So it will cover when the metal scene in Quebec became to be trash metal to death metal. So the name will be Trash Till Death. So that will be the name of the next volume, Trash Till Death. So because like 90% of the bands, most of them demo bands, in Quebec in the 90s were doing mostly primitive death metal. And some of them were doing some really progressive death metal. I remember a small band, Cryptopsy, I think. They were doing this kind of technical stuff, and it was really impressive. So in this scene, we have like Cataclysm, we have Cryptopsy, we have Gorguts, you know, coming with Obscura album and everything. So, and we see also the transformation of the just the alternative scene. Also like band like Groovy Aardvark, Grimmskunk, Overbass, a little bit more related to maybe the punk alternative scene, but they're playing in the same venues, they are promoted by the same promoters, they have the same kind of situation as the metal bands, so we put them together also. So it's not just about metal, it's metal and it's alternative tentacles around. And the volume 3, Alternative Tentacle, I think it's a label with Dead Kennedys also. Yeah,
yeah, that's Jello Biafra's label.
Yeah, it's a great name. I didn't know that.
And the last volume, at least, I think it will still will be with me and Louise Girard, will be from 98 to 2008. So that will cover that 10 years where the scenes literally explode. So more bands were from Montreal going to tour in the US, Europe, becoming more international bands, as I can say. And also a lot of home-made bands, you know, doing music on their in their room with the internet, with Pro Tools. So that's kind of revolution. We're not doing in a big studio. We're not obliged to be in an old-school way of doing rock, you know, things that... So finally, it's we'll explore a little bit the underground mentality, and also we'll stop in 2008 because in 2008 or 2007, sorry, this is where we celebrate the 25th years of the Quebec metal scene with the relating to the first Voivod album, as I can say. So
amazing.
So, and in 2007, we had a show, the 25 years of the Quebec metal scene by Maurice Richard. So he promoted that show in Club Soda with Oblivion and Soothsayers and bands we didn't play since years. So that other book will stop at this point. If there will be a volume 4, I don't know, maybe I will be 50 years old around this time. So let's start for a second one, for sure. He's almost done. The third one is on the way, and let's see for after. So that's basically the project.
I love it. Incredible. I love it. How would you feel about someone one day turning this all into a documentary?
Well, I would feel very good about it. Because I think, did I just sound like Jerry Seinfeld? Because I'm a big Seinfeld fan.
Me too. Okay.
Sorry, man. Really. Honestly, tomorrow morning, I have a meeting with someone who wants to do that, and it's tomorrow morning.
Oh, well, fingers crossed, babe.
Yeah, fingers crossed, totally. I think this would have actually to become a documentary. And when it came out, actually, there's this guy called David Laye. He was a big comedian in Quebec in the 90s. He was playing in dramas and stuff like that. And he now lives in California. And after the book came out, he called me up and he said, "We have to do a documentary about that." And I said,
"Amazing.
Why not?" And he never gave me any news. But at that point, I realized that, it should turn into a documentary. But yes, this would have, and there's still stuff to find, demos to find, and people to interview, and there's places to visit, like the mustache I was talking about earlier on. Like, does this place still exist? Is there still a stage somewhere? You know, there's
the history.
There's a lot of stuff to find, I believe. So yeah, it would be crazy.
I'd love that. And how would you feel if someone when you don't have the energy to do this anymore, continues to put out tomes?
As we wrote it in the very first page of that, the first book, we said that we are not the only two person who have the can I read it?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
We do not claim that our version is the definitive one. We invite every reader of this book who might have insight or who is in possession of new documents to contact us and join our to pursuit of the story or write it by himself. So, if somebody like more people will write about it, more I will be happy, you know. I don't consider that as my my job to put the metal history scene blah 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 in books. I'm doing this because I love this project, Felix also and Louise. But if other people wants to make a follow up and do some hitchhiking on what we already done before, he's more than welcome, you know.
It's amazing.
Absolutely, it is important to I believe leave this space for other people to do their own research and come up with new perspectives, because this is history, and history, even though it's in the past, it's alive in the sense that we keep on interpreting history in different ways as we evolve as a society and as humans. So in 20 years from now, in 5 years from now, I mean, we're already 7 years after the first version of the book, well, we already have new perspectives in this society. So there are different ways of seeing the past. And there are people that I have not been able to find that need to talk. So anyone who wants to do that.
Sort of like Jason Newsted, right?
Man, I wish he's like the guy I wanted to talk to speak with. Have a chat with. The most, I tried all I could. I was in contact with his PR agent and stuff like that, but it did not happen into 2013. But I want this guy to tell us how important Voivod were to him and maybe to Metallica, but just to the whole Californian early thrash metal scene, basically. I'd love to get that perspective. I would definitely love it.
Let's see what happens.
It's out there, Jason.
Let's wrap this up. I'm in awe of what you guys have created. It's amazing, and I'm so stoked that it's out there in English for more people to learn about what happened here in Quebec. It's a truly special place. I'm very lucky to have grown up here and to have had this beautiful, beautiful community to learn so much from. Let's wrap this up with a classic Vox and Hops wrap-up question. Probably doesn't happen to you very often, Jan, because you're taking care of yourself. But Felix, I'm curious, and maybe you can tell me what your cure was back in the day, but what are your hangover cures?
It begins with Gatorade or Powerade.
What color?
Blue Powerade. Blue Powerade Zero, actually. And because I am diabetic, so I have to go for the Zero Blue Powerade. But thankfully, it's got my color in the Zero formula. And, that's basically it.
Awesome. How about you, Jan? When you used to get hangovers?
Yeah. It happens to, you know, I toured Neuraxis, you know, so I got some hangovers on tour, of course, man. Usually, it's pretty Quebecois to say this, but I'm smoking weed. Mm-hmm. Okay? So wake up in the morning, put some hot knives on the oven. Not a joke. Yes. Puff or cut. Hot knives, yeah. And I'm doing some 3, 4, 5, 6 hot knives just with drinking some Powerade, like Felix said. And after this, seriously, I feel better. I have to admit, I feel better, like normal, and my day can go on. Yeah, seriously.
Give me, what's the Quebec version of hot knives? What do you call it?
Puff or cut. Puff au couteau, puff au cut, yeah, hot knives, yeah.
I love it. Felix, Jan, thank you so much for taking the time, having a chat with me, talking about life, metal, and craft beer. Everyone, please go order The History of Quebec Metal. It is available on Brazilian's Points. I will put the link of that in the description of this podcast. Do it. It's a true gem of metal history, and I love it. Cheers to you guys. Thank you for taking the time to hang out with me.
All right, man, Matt. Thank you very much. Merci, Felix. We live in the same town, but we never see each other, so that's fine.
Don't want to see that guy.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, this was an amazing, informative chat. I think that they've cracked it. I think that they've figured it out. The true reason as to why so many bands have come from here, and now we know why. Thank you, Felix. Thank you, Jan. Go pick up that book. I've put the link for you to purchase it in the description of this podcast. And trust me, I've been cherishing my French version for quite some time, and you will absolutely love this book. If you enjoyed this episode, you should absolutely go sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all of the details for any episodes which I've dropped throughout that past week, if I've been a guest on someone else's podcast, news about some cool, exciting projects that I have in the works, as well as the links to any upcoming live interview Thirsty Thursday virtual hangs, which I'm excited to tell you right now. Coming up this Thursday, I shall be hanging out with Ken Sorceron of Abigail Williams. Do it, people. Sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. Trust me, this is a party that you do not want to miss. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have one more episode coming at you this Friday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.